We acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land throughout Australia and recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and community. We pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging.
Data only tells you, are you on track or are you off track? You need to know the track that you want to be on first.
This is the Big Shift for Small Farms podcast. G'day listeners, I'm your host Edgars Grester. Now, according to the Economist newspaper, the world's most valuable resource is no longer oil, but data. And what makes it valuable is what we do with it. So how can farmers benefit from reading into the numbers? In this episode, we'll get some tips from farming consultants about how to use data to improve your management, both in the paddock and on your balance sheet. And we'll find out why owning a bird book is a sign that business is booming.
I'm not really a data geek, but I do have a basic motto or rule of thumb, and that is measure what matters.
That's Mark Gardner from Vanguard Business Services in Dubbo, New South Wales.
Whatever business that you're in, you need to know what matters to you and then set up a program of just being able to measure the things that are important to you. And each business is different, so there may be some things in common, but I suspect there should be things that are unique to each individual business that they might need to measure. I think there are things in an ecological sense that people do need to monitor and measure, and particularly things like ground cover are the big ones, diversity of species, and a whole range of other things. From a financial sense, cash flow, farm profit, and change in net worth are just some of the big ones, and that might be enough. Or for other people, they might want to measure other things. And I really want to emphasise that the measurements around people are also fundamentally important. And we use wellbeing indicators. There are some well-developed, simple wellbeing indicators that are used in the industry. So, you know, a lot of our monitoring is very basic, but very powerful because it's what's important to the people. The other thing I really think, Edgars, which is getting the context right first, about measuring is we need to have a serious conversation in Regen Ag around the importance of profit. Each business needs to be profitable. It has to be. Profit is the stuff that repays debt, saves for the future, reinvests back on farm, builds a kitchen, gives a family holidays, education, whatever it is, these things are generated from profit. So we need to have profitable businesses. And we need to elevate the importance of profit into regen, because I think we get really excitable about the changes on the landscape and the physical things we see, which is great. But they've got to be profitable and they've got to add to profit. However, I do want to say that one of the important questions we ask with all our families is how much profit is enough? And we ask our families to actually go through a process of creating a profit target in their business. To say in our business we need X dollars a year. That's a very powerful and important conversation has. For two reasons. Firstly, we create a business that achieves the sort of profit that we're wanting, because it's no use wanting or needing a profit figure and having a business that has no chance of getting it, which often, unfortunately, is the case. When we have our profit target, we can look back in time with our data and say, well, how many years out of 10 have we achieved that? And again, it's no use having a desire or a need for profit and having a business that might achieve it 2 years out of 10. So, you know, that's where data comes in. But the context is how much profit is enough and what is your profit target for your family? And shaping the business to achieve that 8 years out of 10, something like that, or exceeding it.
Along with having a profit target, Mark says it's also important to be aware of our attitude towards that target.
We slip into what I call this feral mindset, where everyone goes competitive and everyone starts thinking you've got to be in the top 20%. And if I could give a little story, like one of the things I do to relax is marathon running. You might find it very hard to believe, Edgars, but it's not possible for me anymore to be in the top 20% of the people that run the marathon that I'm running with. So what I do is I have a time target that I'm happy with. that I train for and try to achieve. And I think that should be the way that we should be looking at profit targets, is that what's important to understand is the profit target is your families. And when you run your regen business, you don't have to be in the top 20% if that forces you to be in a position that A, isn't possible, or B, moves you away from the lifestyle, or means you have to change your landscape in a way that you don't want. So, you know, I think when we talk profit, we need to say each family is in charge of creating the level of profit that they need to sustain them short and long term. Let's own this profit target. And whether you want to be in the top 20% of a group or not, or whether you need to be, is a whole separate discussion to have.
Collecting and measuring data can help us set goals and stay on track, but it can also help us work out if any new business ideas are viable opportunities.
The overwhelm of getting started is a real thing, and like, is this a good idea? Do other people have the problem that I have?
That's Sarah Nollet, co-founder of Farmers to Founders, an innovation incubator helping farmers develop their new and existing business ideas.
One of the big things is like this balance of a belief that, well, I have this problem, so everyone else might have it, but also this uncertainty of like, does anyone else have this problem and will they actually buy my product? And so kind of the tension between those two things is what we spend a lot of time on in our ideas program. And then how do they actually gain the evidence that other people do want this and it's worth investing time or money to bring it to life?
And I wanted to talk about that conversation around exploring the idea more and gathering that information. Can you touch a little bit about your process and what you recommend people to do to, you know, get that evidence?
Yeah, so we coach and follow the lean startup process, which is pretty well known in the startup world, but maybe less well known in the farming world, which is a lot of fun to bring those worlds together. And so that's really first kind of putting down on paper what your quote unquote hypotheses are. So who's your customer and what's the value proposition or the benefit to them? And then starting to talk to customers in that, you know, segment about whether they have that problem. And the real challenge is not talking about your product. So what we recommend and really best practice is to ask, you know, more about them and what their challenge is. And often the best way to do that is to ask for previous behavior. So you might say, tell me about the last time you went to the grocery store. What did you have in your cart? Why did you make those decisions? Why did you buy X instead of Y? And so it's those open-ended questions, often about retrospective behavior, that can kind of uncover those insights.
Do you have any other experiences where data can play an important role in developing an idea or even an existing business?
Yeah, I mean, some of the data often exists in already what the farmers have been doing or what the business has been doing. And so, for example, we had a farmer and founder come through the program who was selling value-added lamb products. And she had gone from just selling into the commodity market to doing wholesale carcasses into butcher shops. And so she thought actually that in that wholesale market, almost all of her customers would have been the Sydney siders who were looking for this, you know, paddock to plate whole market. And what she realized in looking at the data on her own customers was actually almost everyone was within 100 kilometers of her farm. And so it was a much more local market. And so the insights around how you'd build community and how you'd build that brand and what markets you'd target and what branding you'd target are actually quite different if you're selling within 100 Ks of the farm than if you're selling into a market that's maybe a different demographic or a different even location that hasn't heard of your farm or couldn't come visit. And so that's another example of just using data in your existing customer base to understand a little bit more about where you could create more value or add a different flavor to your marketing or to, you know, how you present the product. I've got another story, if it's helpful, that maybe has a little more data in there. It's a woman who's farming in the Hunter Valley of New South Wales, has an egg farm and is doing an online subscription egg business. And one of the big keys for her around data was understanding the cost of production and really understanding what are all the components. And in egg farming, she could kind of break it down per dozen and say, okay, you know, 3 eggs out of the dozen went to labor and 2 eggs out of the dozen went to the cost of the chooks and et cetera, et cetera. And then you can start to see, okay, within that breakdown, where can I optimize? And for her, one of the big surprises was some of the spending on labor is actually really worth it because even though it seems quite expensive that it's, you know, 3 or 4 out of the dozen, when we go in and we actually train the chooks in the early days to get up on their, you know, little roost areas and lay their eggs in the right place, even though that's really manual the first day, you know, the second day only 50% of them need to be moved, and the next day only 20% and 10%, and then for the rest of the life, they're laying eggs where they should be. And when every egg sells for $1, that's $200, you know, or so over the life, we're super happy to spend that couple days up front. And so it's sometimes those surprising insights when you look at the data of where you might spend more time to cut expenses over the long run, or to do something that doesn't scale in the beginning but might scale over time. But you never would have known that unless you kind of had that data and were measuring that cost of production in this case.
And when it comes to starting on that measurement journey, you know, some people often can be a bit overwhelmed by data collection and managing that information. Do you have any sort of advice on how to keep that simple?
Yeah, we've heard a couple stories of producers doing it, like you said, all different ways, depending on what they're measuring. So producers who are measuring, you know, pasture growth and doing it on Snapchat. So they go out and literally take a photo like they're sending a Snapchat to someone, and then they've got their Snapchat archive of all the pasture growth. Or another producer who built a Google form, you know, takes 10 minutes to build the Google form, and they go into their own Google form and fill it out every day when they go out to check things. And that could be anything from pasture growth to are gates open to how much, you know, weight are stock gaining, condition scores to whatever it might be. So we see all kinds of little hacks like that, where it's just a simple something on your phone or a reminder, or you set an alarm every day and, you know, you jot it down somewhere really simple. One of the keys to that tends to be, can other people access it? So the great thing now about smartphones is you can put it in a Google form, but then people in the back office or other people on their phones can actually use that app, quote unquote, it's really just a Google form, in what they do. And so it's not only digitizing it, but enabling you to share it. But really the kind of barrier to entry there is pretty low. I think the other thing is, you know, there's all areas for all of us running a business of where we're passionate. And so it might be in one part of the operation where you actually want to make changes and you're really quite interested in doing more. And so start there. Like, it doesn't have to be collect all the data across all the operation and make the most complex decision first. It might be, let's just do this one thing a little bit better. And I think of kind of data-driven decisions, like most business improvements, as a muscle. And you sort of build the muscle and then you flex it more and it gets stronger over time. So start where you're passionate, maybe, and then expand to other areas. Or in those other areas, maybe that's where you ask for more help for other people who can take on that responsibility in an area where you're not as interested or not as qualified or confident to take that on. And by kind of combining the two, starting where you're confident and outsourcing to others with more capability, you can kind of meet in the middle and get more done quicker.
Sarah's advice with data is to start simple and build the skill for collecting and making informed decisions, and reach out for advice when you need it. Someone who offers that kind of advice is Graham Hand, farm management consultant and educator. His aim is to help landowners use data to make better management decisions.
The focus that I have is on leading indicators for management. So I'm not trying to get people to do a science project. I'm trying to get them to find enough information on leading indicators so that they can take corrective action to keep the business on track. So that's in terms of the land, the finances, and the people. So what is it that you can do that you get a really early warning? So the simple one that I try and explain, that leading indicator idea, is that, you know, worms in the soil are crucial. But the leading indicator of whether you're going to get worms is decomposing litter on the soil surface. So I get people to check that rather than dig up and look for worms. So look at that, because if that changes, that's going to change the feed supply to the worms, etc. So that's sort of just one small example.
Now, that's really great, contextualizing things. Are there some other examples you can give if we think about veggie growers, if we think about graziers, just some examples so that people can kind of look at their landscapes a little bit differently?
Yeah, so I use a CSIRO research, and they developed a tool called Landscape Function Analysis. David Tongwe and Norm Hindley developed that. So I use that sort of to train farmers, because it's a real early warning. It's soil surface monitoring, and through that you can correct your management. So what is it that the soil surface needs to look like for it to be infiltrating water, cycling nutrients and not eroding? And in a perennial grassland, so grazing sort of my special subject, I call it, sort of my real interest. So you need the ground to be covered with decomposing litter and perennial grasses with large bases that cover the majority of each hectare. So we've then got a way of measuring that, monitoring that, and then that can lead to corrective action and changes to the way you're applying animals to the land.
Talk to me a little bit about some of the pitfalls that farmers can fall into when they perhaps think they're doing well, but the data would say something else. Can you talk a little bit about some of the challenges that you've observed in farmers when they're implementing new practices on their farms?
The big danger I see is sort of knowing, are you heading in the right direction? So most farmers really understand that if you have increasing bare ground, it's the wrong way to go. But are you increasing ground cover all year round? And FarmMap 4D just does that really easily. And
full disclosure, Graham, you're not sponsored by FarmMap 4D for this podcast, but for our listeners who aren't familiar with it, can you just describe the technology and you know, just for example, how it works?
It was originally developed, I believe, by CSIRO, and it was developed for Western New South Wales as a quick way of getting data. So it's using the US satellites and then running them through some processing in Canberra that actually sort of allows you to see whether you've got green material on the soil or bare soil or just ground cover. So those different covers that can give you a summary since like the early 90s to the current day. So it's a bit of a lagging indicator by the time you get the data, but it's not that far. It's usually within the last month or two. If we're decreasing in ground cover relative to the surrounding area, we know the management's not going well. If we're increasing, we know the management is going well. So we just use it like that and use it to adjust stocking rates and trying to adjust stocking rates early. And combine it with that landscape function on the ground sort of monitoring as well. So what we've been doing here where I'm working sort of near Araluen is we've been doing this and monitoring it through the drought, and we can actually demonstrate that we can maintain ground cover. It's sort of decoupled from the rainfall. So, you know, even though the rainfall's gone down, the ground cover's increased at the same time. And that's by taking sort of really timely corrective action. So that means that the business doesn't have to restart with, you know, re-sowing grasses or sort of starting from breeding up from scratch again. So we kept the core breeders and now we're breeding up again from those, and we may do some purchases if the season stabilises a bit. The key is taking early corrective action to make sure that the business is stable.
When using data to make management decisions on your farm, Graham also suggests to do small tests before implementing big changes.
Agriculture is a lot different from many other businesses because of the complexity and because of the cost of failure is so high. I get people to do what I call safe to fail trials. So just do a small trial area or practice area so that you can say, well, yes, I actually know how my land responds. I feel that there's been a big issue that we've given away doing those on-farm trials ourselves to the departments of agriculture and agribusiness. People need to be doing their own work rather than relying on the published data. That can give you a direction, but then you've got to do your own work. So take the corrective action, but do it in a small way, prove that it works, so that you're using the evidence from the data.
Whilst well-managed data can help make informed business decisions, it can also be used as part of business promotion and marketing, especially when you're selling to consumers who are hungry for data as proof of your credentials.
If you had a small-scale direct-to-consumer business, I work with quite a few people in that sort of area, and all we do is use it to show that what we say on the website and in the marketing materials can actually be justified and backed up by the data. Because it's independent and because it's from the satellite, it seems to really engage people because they know that it's quite real and it's not being fiddled with. So I'm thinking of someone that I work with, and you know, they do eggs and they sort of had to sort of improve their frequency of moving and stuff. So the eggs got better, but also you could demonstrate that you've turned the business around and that you're actually starting to increase ground cover through your management. And that resonates with people. Is the food that I'm eating coming off land that's getting better or getting worse? So on a very coarse scale, you can use it that way as well.
What is it like when you see a producer taking on board some of your thinking and approach to farming? How does that make you feel when you sort of reflect on some of your students?
It's quite interesting because I'm trying to get agriculture to the point that it's boring. So one of the data points that Mark Gardner and I use is, are they buying bird books? It's a really interesting one. So not only they think that they've got enough money to buy a bird book, they've actually got birds that they haven't seen before. And they've got the time and mental space to be looking at the birds. So we think it's going really well if they're saying, can you recommend a bird book? At the moment, agriculture is not very boring for a lot of people. They're flat out, they're exhausted. So if we can get them to a point that they're sort of bored with it and looking for off-farm things or more interesting things to do, I feel like I'm doing a really good job.
You almost sound a little bit like a Sherlock Holmes. You know, you come in and check out what's on my bookshelves and you know if I'm doing well or not.
If you're promoting data to other people, you've got to collect data yourself. So, so that's the sort of thing. What's the outcome? How are they actually going? The other one I was thinking about then as I was talking was the financials. So if people are having monthly meetings and they're doing variance to budget on the financials and taking corrective action to put the budget back on track, I also know that they're going really well then, because you've got a few steps that you've got to achieve to do that. You know, you've got to get the data early. You've got to be able to sit down with the team. So people are getting on pretty well. And then they put that budget on track.
The key to this is management. Whether it's out in the paddock or in the office, Graham says that there's a difference between collecting the data and making decisions about it.
There's confusion, I think, between being a bookkeeper and being a manager. So I've always found that if I get presented the data and I've only just got to look at what things are in red because the budget wasn't met, then I can just focus on that. But if I've had to do the crunching the numbers as well, I tend to put, you know, the report away. Which is okay, but as long as you pull it out tomorrow and get on with it. So the key step as a manager of the business is to do the management step. So if you're exhausting yourself doing the bookkeeping, then pay someone else to get it in and take that corrective action. A few of the things that I see, though, is people haven't developed a profitable plan in the first place. So they did what happened last year, plus a bit of inflation, although less so at the moment. So we need to start rethinking about how we actually plan profit into the business and how do we strengthen the business with our expenses. So I spend a fair bit of time on that, because then if you can get the water level down low enough so that people are actually profitable, then we can start spending time doing trials on what would improve the business.
The aim of collecting data is to help make better business decisions. But is there such thing as too much data? Greg Sharp is the managing partner of Barrington Accounting, with over 30 years' experience as a tax consultant. And he says organising the right data is key to understanding business profitability.
I find that traditional accounting information provided at the end of the year is very little use to help farmers manage their farms. Very little, if any, help. In fact, it was probably confusing. What's required is some short, simple reports with some major cost categories to focus on the key cost drivers and, on top of that, the key income element. And once it's broken up and simplified, it's much more understandable and much more useful for a farmer to interpret what the profit is and what drives the profit.
Greg says that traditional accounting systems aren't set up to provide useful management information for farmers because their focus is on producing results for statutory and tax accounting purposes.
For example, with turf farmers, they have specific types of turf they produce. some of the types of turf yield a poor selling price and other turf products have a higher selling price. And some analysis of that is required. Rather than put it all into sales and say, oh, the sales are $3 million for the year and the gross profit is $1.75 million, let's work out what drives that profit or what particular product does. Now, with turf growers in particular, Kaikoura grass is fairly low yielding as far as selling price goes. And some of the couch and you know, obviously the Sir Walter are higher yielding selling price, but they all have different dynamics in terms of how many cuts a year you get out of your farm. And that's worth knowing rather than the sales are $3 million and you've made $1.75 million gross profit. It's good to know what's really the biggest driver. Sometimes you could say, well, why do I sell the low margin turf when it takes me just as much time and effort as the higher margin turf? And there may be some reasons that you do that, but the mix of how you get there is very important. To know the amount of cuts per year and the yields and the cost involved with that, the labour cost, is very important. Unless the accounting system is set up from a management accounting perspective, unfortunately, the turf farmer in this case never really understands the accounts because he doesn't really understand what drives that bottom line.
And that distinction you just mentioned about how much profit and how you made it is quite an important one, right, when it comes down to where all of our efforts are being spent.
Certainly when it comes to the effort, I mean, labour is always a big expense in any organisation, and a farmer's no different. I would be strongly suggesting that there is some allocation of labour between the various product groups. So you might have product group A, B, C and D. It would be not only advisable, it's essential to ensure that a distinction is made between the efforts and the cost involved with each product group. Because in life, it's quite funny. It's a situation at times where the worst performing product requires the most significant amount of attention and the most significant amount of administration. And when you analyse all that out, you say, well, why the hell did I do this?
I think that's a really important distinction for people to think about, is that often that worst performing product requires the most amount of attention.
What you also find is the client or the customer that wants the lowest price creates the greatest amount of angst and pays you late. And analysing customers, I think, is an important thing to do as well. And sometimes you may sacrifice some time to do that. However, understanding customer requirement is essential in running a profitable business. And it also builds up a rapport. It makes your customer feel that, you know, okay, I might be paying you $200,000 a year in produce or whatever it might be, but I know that I'm going to get reliable service, you're honest and open. I know that it's a quality product and price does not mean everything. The more you talk to customers, the stickier they become.
Data can serve many purposes, from confirming a hypothesis to helping solve a problem, and collecting it can be time-consuming. But the real value is in stepping back and getting some perspective, so we can understand where the data fits into the bigger picture. Tax consultant Greg Sharp says that many business owners often don't get around to doing this because they're so busy working in the business and not on it.
All people that run their own business are time poor and task orientated. Most people don't put aside enough time to sit back and have a look at strategies and where they've been and what they've done and what they've achieved. And you need to find some time. Maybe you need to put it in your diary every Friday and no one's going to interrupt me. And the first time you do it, you'll be going, "What? Why am I doing this?" And then you'll structure it to look at, you know, personnel, marketing strategies, profitability, cash flow. You've got to sit back critically and have more time to manage the business, manage more and do a little less.
This podcast has been produced by the Grow Love Project on behalf of Greater Sydney Local Land Services. The episode was mixed and edited by me, Edgars Greste, and the executive producer was Susanna Cable. Thanks to everyone who participated in the making of this episode. You can find out more about them in the show notes. And to listen to other episodes, make sure to subscribe to the podcast. And if you know someone who could benefit, please share it with them. Thanks for listening.